Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Sequelize It, a movie rewatch podcast where we tackle the triumphs and dissect the disasters of movie franchises, act by act by act. Hiding on the planet Exegol for some reason, my name is KC, and joining me are...
I'm your Foxy from Backlash and something something Star Wars reference.
I'm No Chris Alive. Sequelize It's Mastodon of the Monotone, and you'll soon figure out why I'm very excited to be done with this bloated saga.
I don't like Star Wars anymore.
We are here today to talk about this disaster piece of a movie, Star Wars Episode 9, Rise of Skywalker. Before we get into that, though, we just want to let you guys know how you can help the podcast grow. One, you can leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcasting app of choice. Two, be sure to subscribe so you can be the first to hear new episodes. Three, follow us on Twitter at SequelizeIt. Four, send us an email and let us know what movie franchises you'd like to see us take on at sequelizeit@gmail.com. And five, if you like what we're doing, just tell a friend to give us a listen. Backlash and Chris, this movie is a fucking adventure, isn't it?
Yeah.
What were your initial thoughts on it besides seriously fuck this movie?
Okay. I had reservations about seeing this in theaters. Like, when the first trailer came out, I was just looking at it like, wait, this is where we're going? Okay, we're going to do that. All right. I mean, maybe it'll be fine. And then I watched it, and what did you do? What did you do? Oh no!
I mean, I didn't like when I first saw this movie in theaters. I didn't see Disney as the type of people to kowtow to sort of the fans that really, really complained about Last Jedi. But then again, Solo was kind of a bomb, all things considered. Likely because beyond the fact that, like, nobody really cared for that story, much as they loved Han Solo, like, you can't just sell a movie on that when without Harrison Ford, as we will see several weeks later with Harrison Ford. Yeah.
Well, was Solo even a bomb, or is it just it only made some of the money, not all the money?
No, it was a bomb.
It only made a few hundred million dollars. Not all the hundreds of millions of dollars.
It just barely scraped back the budget it took to make it, and probably not even like the advertising budget and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You see, my theory about that is... Oh my god, this movie's killing me. My theory is when they, like we said, when they started this trilogy, they had no plan. And I'm guessing what was going on in Kathleen Kennedy's mind was, it's Star Wars. Everyone loves Star Wars. They'll see Star Wars. So we'll just let people make whatever they want. And then Solo happened. And they're like, oh, we can't do that. Okay, what was everyone's complaint about The Last Jedi?
Yeah.
Okay. Fix that.
And yeah, essentially getting back to after I first watched it, I was just like, just saw like a bunch of like lights and light and sound like rush past me and with barely any rhyme or reason, just like a bunch of like dangling MacGuffins, a bunch of this, that, and the third, just completely, oh my god.
Yeah, it's
and outs and what have yous.
Yeah, it's a bunch of sound and fury signifying nothing. That's what this movie is. I really did not want to watch this movie for the longest time. It always took me a while to watch the sequel movies, just because I wanted to wait until like the hysteria over them like went down a little bit. And then I think one day I was just sitting, because I'm working at home, because spoiler, we work in COVID times now, so that's a thing that everyone does now. I was working at home and I didn't have much work to do, and I was like, sure, I'll pop it on. What's the worst that could happen? And never have I wished that I could be doing my job more, because it just, I want to coin the phrase prequel syndrome. I said that before, I think I said that a lot during the prequels, where a lot of this movie, everything happens and nothing happens. There's a bunch of shit going on, but none of it has any, like, relevance. And as soon as something happens, it's like we forget that thing and pick up another thing that we forget almost as quickly, if not more quickly. I was not looking forward to rewatching this movie, even less so than Jedi, because at least with Jedi, you can have your, like, nostalgic feelings about it, and you can appreciate Jedi for what it is. You know, it may not be the best of the original trilogy, but I feel like we kind of bagged on the movie a lot, but compared to this fucking movie, it's just...
The fatigue that you get at the end of Return of the Jedi, at the very least, like, it seems to be broken down into, like, three different goals from, like, one act to the next. Or at least, like, then the third act splits into its own three different goals. But I mean, with this, it's like, multiply that by four.
I'll tell you what it is. Return of the Jedi isn't three movies crammed into one.
Yeah, that's it. And I was going to be like, oh, wouldn't it be funny if we just reviewed the movie and, like, each of us did an act and did three acts, and Backlash was like, I'm not fucking doing that. And upon rewatching, I can't say I blame you. Cause
yeah, bit sadomasochistic.
I had a hard enough time writing up an act summary for this.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. I guess we'll get into it. I really don't want this movie to be like a 2.5 hour long discussion. I really don't. So, with our initial thoughts out of the way, and now trivia. Feel free to interrupt me, ask questions. I'll try and see if I care enough to answer them. Star Wars, the disaster piece that no one wants to take credit for, has a convoluted and ass-backwards production history, mostly spurred on the belief that a movie that made well over $1 billion and was critically lauded had nearly irreparably damaged the franchise. Thanks to the maniacal rantings of a small cabal of lunatic fans who wouldn't have been happy if The Last Jedi were just 2.5 hours of Luke Skywalker telling them how special and right they are for hating other cultures and women. Okay, that's not entirely fair, but suffice it to say, if The Last Jedi's reception from a segment of the fanbase hadn't been so venomous, this movie probably wouldn't have been so thoroughly fucked over by executive meddling. The Last Jedi director Rian Johnson was rumored at one point to turn to direct episode 9, but Johnson has disavowed himself of having fuck all to do with this movie. In August of 2015, Colin Trevorrow was hired as the film's director. Trevorrow is perhaps most notable as the man who resurrected the Jurassic Park franchise with the movie Jurassic World, which the I'm
middling
sure.
Middling results.
Oh, God. I'm going to go off on this. Can we? Are you going to mention?
No, let me finish.
Okay.
Which I'm sure Backlash will have nothing but good things to say about when we get around to doing the Jurassic Park movies. See, I already knew.
Well, I have something to say specifically about this, but go on.
Well, you can go ahead.
Well, no, because he was scheduled to direct this. And one of the reasons he was removed was because he made a movie called The Book of Henry. Have either of you seen The Book of Henry?
No,
I have not.
I have. Let me give you a short plot synopsis.
Oh, God.
There is a boy. His name is Henry, and he's a bit of a child prodigy. Like, he's very smart. He knows all the math. He's made millions of dollars in the stock market, and he's only like 8 years old. One day, he notices that his neighbor, a young girl about his age, is being abused by her father. But he can't go to the police because her father happens to be best friends with the chief of police. And he tries going to the school principal, but they won't listen to him. And damn it, Janet, we need to do something about this. That's an actual quote from the movie. So he starts to write a book. And he's writing a book. But then, oh no, Henry suddenly dies and oh no, it's sad. And his mother finds the book, and the book is a plot on how to kill the neighbor. A step-by-step plot of how she can kill the abusive neighbor and get away with it. And she does this. She doesn't actually kill him. She just kind of yells at him a little bit, and then he goes home and kills himself, and then she adopts a daughter. And that's the movie. It is absolutely bug shit insane. If you thought the Jurassic World movies were bad, watch Book of Henry. Your brain will melt. And the executives at Disney watch Book of Henry and says, we hired this guy to direct a Star Wars movie. Get rid of him.
Jesus Christ. Well, I guess that dovetails into what my next bit. Trevorrow would go on to write several screenplay drafts for his film, which, depending on which sources you believe, look to be called Duel of the Fates.
I don't believe it's real because this man is a hack. And it's too good.
Actually, after what you said, I can come to the conclusion that more high-paid billionaire executives are like Vince McMahon than anyone would care to admit. In terms of their sort of snap judgments, their quick changes in decision, and their whims.
Yeah.
It's like they hired the wrong one-legged man, they realized.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really talk about Episode 9 without seeing what Duel of Fates kind of was and why Disney and Lucasfilm may have been quote-unquote unsatisfied with Trevorrow's script. Let's walk through some of the plot points now so we don't have to do it later, and we can maybe draw a line from where Duel began and see maybe what problems Disney had with it. Okay, the character of Rose Tico, which had for some reason become the biggest target of fan rage in much the same way Jar Jar Binks had a much bigger role in Duel, which is to say, she actually had a role at all. The romantic relationship that was teased throughout these two movies between Rey and Finn, or I think I read that wrong. It might have been Rey and Poe, which would have been way more weird. But either way, it was also featured in this group that Luke would warn her against forming attachments. The Knights of Ren were supposed to be a greatest focus and actually had names. Hux is living the life of luxury on Coruscant, which I thought was blown up, but whatevs. Leia was supposed to live. If we went over every single plot point, we'd be here forever. While the script itself is kind of rough, it at least had, you know, ideas and seemingly wanted to build on what Rian Johnson had done in The Last Jedi. But never mind all that shit. In 2017, Jack Thorne, who was most favorite for writing for television shows such as Shameless and Skins, was brought in to give the script a page one rewrite. Naturally, Trevorrow and Lucasfilm head Kathleen Kennedy had a falling out, leading to Trevorrow departing the film. And yes, the Book of Henry, I imagine, was also at least some part of that. This doesn't set up, but it shows a weird trend that I think we haven't talked about. Besides The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi, each of Disney's Star Wars movies has let a director go. Rogue One's director, Gareth Edwards, was never technically fired, but reshoots were overseen by Tony Gilroy. We mentioned before that Solo's original directors were fired and replaced by Ron Howard. Another Star Wars anthology movie, helmed by Fantastic Four director Josh Trank, was more or less buried when details of Trask's behavior on the set of Fanforestick leaked and Trask was let go. And here lays the remains of Colin Trevorrow as well. It is an interesting plot point in these movies that Disney couldn't seem to nail down any two directors besides J.J. Abrams and Rian Johnson, who are the only ones who got to see their two films come to fruition under their vision, which I want to say means that they made really good movies, but I'm not sure. It was just something weird that I realized when I was doing more research for these movies. Rian Johnson was briefly rumored to come back and direct Episode 9, but he really, really seemed to not want fuck all to do with it. And so The Force Awakens director J.J. Abrams was brought back. Abrams wrote the script with Chris Terrio, perhaps best known for writing movies that weren't controversial at all, such as Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice, and Justice League. Also, he won an Oscar for Argo. This also marked something of a return to the series for George Lucas, as Abrams and Terrio actively sought out his input, for better or worse, on the nature of the Force. Kathleen Kennedy, who I really do gets more shit than she deserves on some levels, did seem to have a higher level of executive meddling in this movie than the others, requesting that certain plot beats that don't really make sense be placed in the movie, such as Kylo Ren's return to the light and bringing back a dead guy. We'll never truly know just how much of Rise of Skywalker's script was written as a repudiation of Rian Johnson. Chris Terrio would say that he doesn't quite see it that way, as is Abrams. But a lot of the way that the movie is written explicitly to address criticism to The Last Jedi, and as much as I'd like to believe that Kennedy and Abrams and Terrio never meant for their movie to retcon Johnson's, too much of this movie undoes what Johnson laid down for it to be a complete accident, or for us fans to be reading too much into things. Rise of Skywalker would go on to rake in $1.074 billion at the box office. In a complete and total reversal from The Last Jedi, it only earned a 51% from critics on Rotten Tomatoes, but has an 86% audience score.
Fuck you, Cody Rhodes. Asshole. I'm sorry that I'm ramrodding in the wrestling references, but one of the things I distinctly remember on that movie's like opening weekend was his tweet, "It just kept moving." And that was his note of praise. That was the way he summed up the spectacle of that movie.
Yeah, it kept moving, and it got moving so fast that everyone got sick and died.
That's the problem with perpetual motion machines. Eventually, you're not going to be able to take it, and you're going to be crushed by the pressure. Okay, let's get this show on the road. Act one.
All right, I'm handling this. Act one. Rise of Skywalker. The opening crawl very casually informs us that Emperor Palpatine is no longer dead. I mean, sure, he was literally in the middle of an explosion and not a single movie of the two prior to this one even hinted at his presence, but please continue. Kylo Ren rages his way to Palpatine by killing, force pushing, and rock bottoming a bunch of unknowns and grabbing a triangle that glows green in the middle. On a stormy planet, he passes a tank full of Snokes and comes upon the Dark Lord, who in the tradition of Dr. Loomis in Halloween 4 only suffered burns on his hands. He's hooked up to some terribly mechanical contraption and strobe lights are always going on around him. Apparently, he was speaking to Kylo through Snoke and Vader this entire time. Finn and Poe are on the deck of the Falcon going somewhere when one piece of the plot is told to them. There is a resistance spy in the First Order ranks. They evade a bunch of TIE fighters through a bunch of different CGI virtual backgrounds via Poe's method of light speed skipping. Okay, whatever. Rey is training in the Force and attempting to commune with the spirits of the Jedi. Her contact is broken, and she has a talk with Leia. We see Rey go through a training course with, yes, lightsaber and blast helmet deflection. How novel. Apparently, she needs to earn Luke's laser sword. Kylo worships Vader's helmet. As Rey reads an old text, which conveniently has the green triangle that Kylo used previously, the Rebels get the latest update. Palpatine has somehow returned. They don't bore each other with explanations of such things. They know they need to find a triangle that will get them to a planet called Exegol. To find the triangle, they need to go to the forbidden desert planet of Pisana. Rey has apparently earned Luke's laser sword. Leia tells her to never be afraid of who she is, which is strange because I never got the idea it was a big deal to her. We see the Knights of Ren. They are the Knights of Ren. Palpatine has 10,000 times the capability of the First Order's fleet, apparently. The heroes arrive on Pisana. Apparently, Luke was trying to find Palpatine all this time. Conveniently, there's a once-in-42-year festival going on. Some forbidden planet. An alien gives Rey a beaded necklace and has a foreshadowing exchange with her. Rey and Kylo commune, with Kylo already revealing that he will betray Palpatine. The heroes run into Lando Calrissian, of all people. he also knows about Palpatine. They find out that a Jedi named Ochi has a ship that should lead them to the Green Triangle. Poe hotwires a speeder. Despite him knowing about ships, being a pilot, Finn asks him where he got this skill because foreshadowing. Stormtroopers find them as they are in pursuit of the location of Ochi's ship. Rey gets deja vu from the ship. Finn really needs to tell Rey something, but it can wait as they get sucked into the sand. Poe asks Finn what he needs to tell Rey, but it can wait for no reason this time. They find a dagger that will also help them find the Green Triangle. C-3PO knows the specifics of this, but can't say because plot. There is Sneck. Sneck has wound. Rey heals Sneck. They get out of their predicament. Rey separates from the group because she has a deadly premonition. We see the Knights of Ren. They are the Knights of Ren. Because Rey went off the backflip and cut off the wings of Kylo's TIE fighter, the First Order
has Kylo shot.
The First Order has captured Chewie. Rey and Kylo play a tug of war with a vessel holding Chewie. Out of sheer desperation and exertion, Rey emits force lightning from her hand, destroying the ship and Chewie. Heroes are sad. They go off world in Ochi's ship. That is Act One.
That's too good.
So, you want to try to break this down?
Okay, let me start. I'm going to talk about the Legends universe again. There is a story in the Legends universe where Palpatine returns. So this has been done before.
Okay.
And it's been done stupider. Because at least in that story, it's kind of explained that he's so evil he clawed himself back from the underworld and took over someone else's body.
Right. I mean, this gives us almost no explanation. Like, this gives us about it as infinitesimal an explanation one can get in a movie in a feature length by just saying I've been dead before.
Yeah. The dark side of the Force can lead to things that some people would consider unnatural. That is the only reference to the prequels in this fucking movie.
Right.
Oh my god.
He's hooked up to a machine and he has burns on his hand. So that implies that like the explosion affected him, but just a touch. It was a pretty significant explosion.
Should we bring up the fact that J.J. Abrams cleared up a few things after the movie came out?
Sure, why not?
The Palpatine in Jedi was a clone.
No. I thought he said that wasn't going on. That's what Mike Staclasa thought, and he was wrong.
No, he said, wasn't it the other way around?
I'm pretty sure it was Mike Staclasa like having a crazy idea, and then J.J. Abrams was like, no, he's not a clone. Hold on, let me look this up right now.
The fact that we even have to like look it up, like says something about the fact that it makes no sense no matter what the theory was. Like,
he wanted Palpatine to be a clone in The Force Awakens. Oh my god.
Why? Why? It makes no sense. Like, if you like that kind of retcon like completely invalidates everything that Luke
and Vader knew. You know the good things is about Return of the Jedi? Invalid.
Well, I mean, that was our, like, I guess he thought this was another comment on the prequels being like, well, the prequels already ruined Vader's redemption by making him a complete monster prior to that. So I mean, hey, we may as well just undo it in the most literal sense.
I mean, I think we have said that there's no way that Anakin can be redeemed, but I don't think that's the opinion of most people in the larger fandom.
Right.
Most
Well, Anakin can be redeemed later on in this movie, as we'll find out.
Yeah.
From an AURA oral point of view.
Yeah. But I just this movie is just, I mean, first they spoil the fucking movie in literally the opening crawl. So there's no time to like wonder if Palpatine has returned. Nope, he's just back. And
it's also hilarious, like just the way information reaches characters. Like, do they have spies on? They have spies on the fucking on the First Order. But like, we see Kylo meet with Palpatine, and then like maybe not even 10 minutes later, like the information is relayed to the Resistance that Palpatine is alive, which is pretty fucking huge considering how tucked away Exegol is.
Mm.
And yeah. not just that, but Kylo immediately reveals he's going to betray him. He's like, I have other things in mind, or whatever it is. Like, we don't know where the fuck the Resistance going in the opening. Like, why they're just on a random mission, I guess.
Yeah, it's just the movie. There's so much stuff to complain about, but all of it doesn't mean anything. So it
we have plot points. We gotta get to the next plot point. Don't think about how we have to get there. We have to get there because that's what the script says.
This movie deals in MacGuffins and convenience.
This movie is the Marine of Star Wars movies. Just keep running forward. Keep running forward. Don't stop long enough to let John Cena act and emote. Just have the character run from plot point to plot point until the damn thing ends. That's it.
You know, now that you brought that up, one day we're going to have to talk about the Marine franchise.
Nope, because three of those movies are direct-to-home video, so fuck them. But
yeah, in 8 months, your point will be valid. But considering how much is released on streaming these days, like, I'll try not to argue against that.
Yeah,
I just don't want to. There's so many little plot points that you could pick apart, like the fact that I mentioned in the Last Jedi that like Rey and Poe meet for the first time, and they have like this kind of cute, kind of heartwarming meeting of you like they know each other through Finn, but they've never met each other. It's just like a nice little scene because and then in this movie they're like at each other's fucking throats and sarcastic, and Rey is mad that he lights hyperspeed whatever jumped or whatever. Poe Dameron lightspeed rescue, I don't fucking care.
It's reminiscent sort of like less, more chill, but of Obi-Wan and Anakin. It's the way they're sort of arguing just for the kind of for the sake of it. Except even that was for the purpose of like furthering a kind of rift between two characters.
Yeah, that Anakin and Obi-Wan are kind of sniping at each other for a reason. Rey and Poe aren't, they're not. The only thing Poe is upset about is that Rey is training instead of going on dangerous missions with them. But that plot point gets like immediately fucking dropped and doesn't come back. It's like, I'm trying to figure out how this script was constructed and written in the ways that it was.
Also, we kind of skipped over the fact that Luke's lightsaber was fixed with electrical tape.
Yeah, it's just back to normal.
Yeah. But it looks pretty seamless, and she apparently doesn't feel worthy of it.
She doesn't feel worthy of it for, like, 5 minutes of screen time. Can we talk about what a bad idea it was to have Carrie Fisher be so integral to the plot of this movie? I understand wanting to pay her tribute, but
I imagine just her Carrie Fisher's death just threw a wrench in everything.
That is probably true, but I don't feel like they maximize the screen time that she has. It is very easy to tell that she is not in the scene with Rey, or really with anybody. You can tell that these are just deleted bits from other scenes from other movies. It's a very I don't know. It's unsettling, I think, is the word for it. I feel like there was a better way to do this, you know, than the way she was treated in this movie. I just feel like
I'm glad they didn't go the CGI route, as we'll see later.
Yeah.
Mercifully short. Yeah.
Yeah. At least it wasn't that bad, but I don't know. I feel like her being such an important character, you know, and you can argue back and forth whether she had to be an important character in this movie, but I feel like the decision to make her the most important character, well, not the most important character, but the role she has in this movie doesn't do Carrie Fisher justice, I think, is my overall point. What else is there to talk about in this first act?
We could talk about, I mean, like, again, all of this is kind of nonsense, and just to get from one place to another, it's very reminiscent of episode one, where it seems like the broader sort of elements are known to the audience, but just like getting from one point to another in a microcosmic sense, like things, any problems that the characters run into are just solved immediately with in ways that don't seem to rely on the character's ingenuity or anything that we've seen them do before. Like when Rey heals the snake, or when she uses the force lightning, which admittedly is cool. Like that's
the one good scene about this first act.
Right.
And spoiler warning, they immediately ruin it, but it is the one scene there's only a few scenes in this movie that I was emotionally affected by, in ways other than just rage. And
Pasana is like a ridiculous setting. Like there's no need to give exposition about it. That's absolutely unnecessary.
Also, I couldn't help but notice everyone is being a dick to C-3PO. And I think that's to set up what happens later.
Yeah, they're just being a jerk to, and like C-3PO, yes, he's always meant to be kind of an annoying character, and they do tell C-3PO to shut up and stuff like that, but it's not like they are openly antagonistic towards him.
It feels like when they're on Pasana, they're trying to ditch him a lot of the time.
Yeah, they're like, fucking, can someone just take this gold droid? God, I wish this gold droid would just die and disappear forever. It just, I don't know. There's a scene where Leia says something about not underestimating a droid, and then they have to have the scene where BB-8 kind of sort of helps them, and while they're fleeing the stormtroopers, and Rey's like, never underestimate a droid. And I'm like, that scene is only there because somehow you had a scene of Carrie Fisher saying, never underestimate a droid. Because I can't remember what context it happened in, but I do remember that it didn't make sense. I mean,
also it feels so easy. Like they set up that Luke has been looking for Palpatine this whole time, and the lead is Ochi's ship. And I guess they never they just so easily figure out everything immediately. I mean, like, okay, it's happenstance that they fall into like the sinking sand bit, but they get out of that pretty easy. And we find Ochi is dead down there.
You know what this reminds me of? The sort of Jedi Ochi. Speaking of prequels, it reminds me of fucking...
Wait, Ochi isn't a Jedi. He's a Jedi hunter.
Yeah.
Oh, a Jedi... Damn. Well, I was going to see... It reminds me of, like, the Sifo-Dyas from episode 2, who they're like, oh, yeah. this character in the past, like, did all this stuff that's quite important to the overarching plot, but we never get any sort of characterization of them or context beyond just like, oh, here's some exposition that we want to tell you is useful.
But even in the context of like episode two, which I think is probably the worst of the prequel movies, I think
it's the worst Star Wars movie. Like,
oh, even, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I will not. One thing that, like, I hate to say, despite how much we're dishing this, like, I don't think that this is at the bottom.
Yeah, no, but, like, because I can remember what happened in this movie. I've already forgotten what happens in episode two. I can't remember shit about that movie. I brought it up when we talked about it.
But
it even goes in and goes right back out.
I feel like in that movie, Obi-Wan, I like the Obi-Wan doing the mystery solving stuff. And it seemed
but we're told what the solution to the mystery is at the beginning of the movie.
That's true. I guess. I don't know. I just it really bugged me that everything that happens in this part of the movie doesn't fucking matter. None of it matters. This movie is a fucking house show. Like, nothing that happens at it matters. The title change you saw will be undone on Monday Night Raw. Nothing that happens in it fucking means anything. And like, we talk about how Finn is like the little bit of characterization they try and give Poe Dameron, him hot wiring stuff and like knowing a guy who can help them with C-3PO, and Finn's like, how do you know that? And it's like, fucking, what do you mean, how does he know that? He's a fucking rebel pilot. What the fuck do you mean, how does he know? So much shit happens in this first act, and I'm struggling to remember all the stuff that annoyed me, because it's just replaced by other shit that annoys me.
Let's see, the Knights of Ren.
What about them?
What do they say about them? Like, ruffians? Ghouls. They're ghouls. And they do, they're barely an inconvenience for, like, they just stand around looking foreboding in the first two scenes, and then they're pretty much brushed aside in the last one.
They're the most action figure ass characters in this movie.
More so than Phasma. You wouldn't have even imagined that like anyone could surpass that.
At least Phasma had fucking lines.
Yeah. And was a stepping stone for a character.
Yeah. The Knights of Ren are fucking nobodies. Well, you'll see what
they brought them up in The Force Awakens, so we can't do nothing with them.
But they weren't even things in the fucking Force Awakens, were they?
No, like, we got like a shot of them.
Why couldn't that just be covered in a fucking cartoon or fucking TV show later? It's like the dumbest way to try and solve an issue. It's like, okay, well, a small contingent of people complained that not enough was done with the Lights of Orion, which is a Power Rangers thing. Jesus fucking Christ. The Knights of Ren. Who gives a shit about the Knights of Ren? Like, I feel like they zero in on this pedantic bullshit that didn't have any real effect on the kind of movie that The Last Jedi was. It's just people complaining because their theory about who they were wasn't brought to fruition. And it doesn't matter anyways, because those theories were all proven wrong anyways.
Yeah. And not just like as opposed to things that lead to nothing, there's a lot of, in this first act, there are a lot of things that are contained within this movie supposed to be foreshadowing. There's Leia telling Rey not to be afraid of herself. There's Rey saying, I don't have a last name, I'm just Rey, to that random person who gives her a necklace. There's Poe hotwiring a speeder and Finn, for some reason, wondering like why he has engineering acumen. There's... fuck. Fuck, what's the other one? I forgot. There's the spy. I don't give a shit.
We were introduced to General What's His Face.
Oh, General Pride. I didn't even write about him. Poor Richard.
No, because he's not a character. He's just because what they're gonna do with Hux. We need someone else.
We need more bad guys because we're gonna shit can the two main bad guys. It's almost like you could have just kept the bad guys that you had, and then you wouldn't have to find reasons for two bad guys we don't give a shit about. This fucking movie. Does anyone have anything else before we can move to Act Two?
No.
I can't think of anything.
Okay, let's just go to Act Two, because fuck.
Okay. All right, that is my cue. Aboard Ochi's ship, Rey is freaking out that she might be evil after she accidentally killed Chewie. If you're upset about that, don't worry. The next scene reveals he's fine. Tension? Never heard of it. Without the dagger, there's no way to find the Wayfinder. But since C-3PO mentions the inscriptions, they can memorize the inscriptions. They can just take him somewhere and crack his head open like an egg. But uh-oh, Kylo Ren is following them. Meanwhile, BB-8 goes to look for a more marketable droid product. We find ourselves on planet Kajimi, but the First Order is already raiding the whole planet. This is bothering me, but why is C-3PO wearing a coat? We're quickly introduced to Zori, who gives us Poe's backstory that no one asked for. One ass kicking later, everyone becomes friends. We meet a gremlin who can get the info outside of C-3PO's head, but it will cause his memories to be erased. Naturally, C-3PO objects, but no one else cares, so he gets strapped into the torture chair. Poe and Zori have a nice heart-to-heart where Poe shits all over the ending of the previous movie, and Zori gives him another MacGuffin that will be really useful in 5 minutes. She also gives a good analogy about how fascism works. If only she had time to become a real character. C-3PO finally spits out the info they need. Looks like we'll be going back to Endor. But oh no, Kylo Ren is here. And Rey can sense that Chewie is alive. Would have been a nice reveal if we hadn't already been told he was alive. And C-3PO's memory wipe is being played for laughs. Aw, the yucks a total violation of one's mind can bring. Thanks to the Magic MacGuffin, they can land on the Star Destroyer no problem and are met with minimal security. They're not even pretending stormtroopers are a threat anymore. But Rey can sense where the dagger is, so she splits up. Poe and Finn manage to find Chewie, but they kind of suck at this, so the rescue lasts about 30 seconds. Meanwhile, Rey has found her way into Kylo Ren's bedroom, where he's keeping Darth Vader's melted helmet on display. Picking up the dagger gives her another memory jolt, but Kylo starts messing with her mind again, and it's time to retcon more of The Last Jedi. Turns out Palpatine has been looking for Rey for a long time and had her parents killed. The rest of our heroes are at the mercy of General Hux. Poe brings up that Finn never told Rey his big secret and never will. But in what might be the worst twist ever, Hux is the spy! Even the movie doesn't understand its own bullshit. Back in the hangar, Kylo Ren has arrived to reveal Rey's biggest secret. She is the granddaughter of Palpatine! Palpatine fucked a lady! Excuse me. Excuse me. Kylo also explains that he and Rey are a dyad. What's that? Shut up. He tries to tempt Rey back to the dark side, but convenient timing always rears its head, and the Falcon shows up to whisk Rey away. As for General Hux, he tries to talk his way out of this mess, but Admiral What's-His-Face just shoots him. Thanks for coming, Donald Gleason. You were completely underutilized in this trilogy. The Falcon crash lands wherever the hell the wreckage of the Death Star is. Looks way too big to just come across a Wayfinder. But what luck! Ochi's dagger points right to it. How? Shut up! More characters now, as we're introduced to Finn's third love interest in the series, Janna. Her and her gang are willing to help fix up the Falcon, but Rey just wants to get to the Death Star. As repairs are made in the Falcon, Janna gives her backstory that she's also a former stormtrooper. Finn is almost giddy with excitement, but the mood is cut short as we find out Rey Solo Bodin is making her way to the Death Star. Fortunately, they have another boat that Finn can follow her in. We get a short argument between him and Poe that basically says he'll be repeating his character arc from The Last Jedi. Rey makes it aboard the Death Star wreckage and finds a way to the ruined throne room. Fortunately, the automatic doors to the vault still work. As Rey takes the Wayfinder, she is confronted with a dark vision of herself, causing her to drop the Wayfinder right into the hands of Kylo Ren. Jeez, he just keeps showing up everywhere. He basically points out that Rey has gone full evil, but she isn't paying attention until he destroys the Wayfinder, sending her into a blind fury. Her duel with Kylo is intense. Even Finn can't snap her out of it. It looks like Kylo has the upper hand until Leia decides she needs to have her dramatic death. This momentary distraction gives Rey the opening she needs to stab Kylo right in the chest, but only then it hits her that she's gone totally evil. Fortunately, she learned healing touch either, so she pulls a control Z and undoes it, then steals Kylo's ship and runs away. The Resistance is left absolutely gutted as they find Leia has died. R2-D2 reflects on how useless he's been in this movie. Finn and Poe have the news broken to them, and Chewie has an absolute breakdown as he realizes everyone who was ever important to him is now dead. Kylo Ren has been left on the Death Star wreckage, wondering if Space Uber is in service this far out, when a familiar voice calls out to him. Look, kids, Han Solo is back! Never mind that Harrison Ford clearly doesn't want to be here, or that he couldn't even be bothered to shave. Han Solo is back. They have a nice heart-to-heart, and Kylo eventually breaks, and Ben Solo turns his back on the dark side and tosses his lightsaber in the ocean. Might have been useful to hang on to, but oh well. And that's Act 2.
Oh, boy.
Wow, so how Rian Johnson-esque of them to be emphasize this green triangle throughout the entire movie and then just have Kylo Ren crush it. Just completely subverting our expectations, but...
Oh, boy. It's like... The weird thing about this movie, right, is that, like, when we talked about the prequels, for example, like, we could, like, pick a topic and just you could pick apart the movie and sort of try and extrapolate what Lucas meant or what the screenwriters meant and try and come up with like a theory for what was why the thing that is happening on screen is happening. And so even if you don't agree with the thing that's happening on screen, you could at least see where the writer is coming from. Like that's the takeaway I have from the prequels is that are they good movies? No. But was Lucas trying to tell a certain story? Yes. This movie wants to tell you no stories. And that's why there is no story in this movie. It is just plot. It is all plot. And so it makes it really hard to like parse what happens in the movie and try and like figure out what it means because it literally means nothing. As you can tell by our astounding silence in this act. I mean
that should have like much more impact are situated in this portion of the movie, but like because of everything else that leads to them and the build up being ultimately very unfulfilling and needless and just unimpactful. Yeah, it's don't really hit as hard. I mean, I'm just a sucker for the whole Han Solo "I love you, I know" thing. So, like, the very last bit between him and Kylo is, without Kylo even Ben even saying "I love you," is I thought that was neat. That was nice because Adam Driver is fucking great. That's why.
Yeah, because he's acting his ass off in this movie, and the movie doesn't deserve it. But
it had the spark. Kudos to him. Yeah, it had the spark of something good. Just couldn't quite grasp it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a few moments like that in this movie.
Like Chewie's death. Like
God. Watching him just collapse and start crying, that just hit me so hard because it realized, oh my God, he's lost everyone. Literally. Everyone.
Like it would have meant more for Chewie to die. Like I love Chewbacca just like everybody else does. But it would have meant more for Chewbacca to die because he doesn't do anything really in this movie. And so why not allow him to live in the Force with his friends? He is literally the last one left. We don't... even if you take the Christmas specials as... the Star Wars Christmas special as canon, I'm pretty sure his family is all dead as well. All he has is C-3PO and R2-D2. That is it. Of course.
Have you seen how sturdy the railings on their house are? They eventually fell off.
I mean, it is a tree house. But I thought it was extraordinarily cruel. And I know they didn't mean to do this, but this is just me empathizing with the character that literally everyone Chewie loves is dead. Literally. It is so sad. And you see him cry over Leia's death. Ugh, that is one of the scenes that gets you in the feels. But not just because it's sad, but because it makes me upset that they treated Chewbacca in the manner that they did. And you could say the same thing for C-3PO, who...
You know what? Let's talk about that. Anthony Daniels is famously a complete asshole.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's completely full of himself. But I will agree with him on one thing. He, when they were shooting the original trilogy, he kept asking George Lucas, "Can I have a little more depth with my character?" And Lucas just kept shooting him down. And he finally got them to agree to do that so that he'd have this moment where he has to sacrifice his memories for the, you know, for the good of the resistance. And they have, and they give him that moment just having one last look at my friends. But then they're a complete dick to him the rest of the movie.
Yeah, they don't even care.
The laughs.
Like, they don't even care that their friends sacrifice themselves. Like, as soon as it comes up, as soon as the plan comes up, they're like, oh, yep, we're going to do that. You know?
Well, I mean, to be fair, like, how much is C-3PO, and he's in the first movie an okay amount of time. How much is he in The Last Jedi? Ever?
He's really in a couple shots.
Yeah. That's what he fucking gets for not explaining his arbitrary red arm. And then he has red eyes when he's reading the Sith text. Maybe that was foreshadowing.
Meaning they put red LEDs in just for that moment.
Yeah.
I mean, how much more would it have meant for Rey's story if Chewie died? That's what I keep coming back to. Because then her fear of falling to the dark side means something instead of just being a plot point that is literally just there for her to just overcome it like everything else in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all this movie is go to a place, find a thing. Got the thing, now we need to go to a different place, find a different thing. They find the thing, the thing does the thing, then they go to another place to find another thing.
I mean, they didn't kill Chewie because the movie has no balls. They don't want to upset the fans, so they can't do that.
What do y'all think of this? Maybe like a minor thing in the grand scheme, but like, they did this in the first act, they did this in the second act. What do you think of the whole force kind of thing that Rey and Kylo have, where they could sort of manifest things physically between like one location and another, and they have
That's actually a cool idea.
Yeah, it is a cool idea.
I feel like they take far less time to kind of explain. I guess that's the fucking dyad, because they had this in the Last Jedi where they were communing with each other from far away, and that was like very neat to show that they're connected in a certain way, that they're almost like yin and yang, which we discussed in the last episode. But in this case, like, it does feel like further justification for the very last scene where Rey gives Finn the lightsaber when he's being beaten down
You mean when Rey gives Kylo the lightsaber?
Sorry, all these mostly monosyllabic. Kylo is too.
We talked about how John Boyega, like the back and forth between all the characters, but he Rian Johnson didn't understand the character of Finn, so he wrote him in a way that he could understand Finn, and in so doing, gave Finn a lot of depth that he might not have otherwise had. He saw a challenge, and he made a character that he could relate to, or at least one that he could write and see himself liking. Finn's arc has completely stopped. Finn doesn't change at all in this movie.
Right. I can accept that, like, his growth in the second one doesn't necessarily leave as much room, but really J.J. Abrams kind of insults him even further. J.J. Abrams and Terrio by just saying, here's another potential love interest.
Yeah.
There's a
YouTube channel called Nando V Movies where he did a complete he wrote Rise of Skywalker as if he was what he would do if he could write the movie. And his idea for Finn specifically was that Finn should in some way be affected by the fact that he has killed a lot of stormtroopers. I mentioned that in The Force Awakens, that Finn doesn't seem to really care that he's blowing up people who, for all intents and purposes, may not have been his friends, but certainly people that he knew.
And people that ultimately were in the same position as him.
Right. And basically what Nando B Movies does is like, okay, let's expand on that. Let's have Finn actually feel some remorse about killing these stormtroopers. And so that when he meets Janna, it means something. That he's found former stormtroopers. That he's found good stormtroopers. That would have been an arc, you know? Finn kind of... And I'm trying not to completely tell you what the entire video about, but I would just have liked to see Finn do something in this movie. And I just think it's ironic that a lot of the actors in the press, in the release of this movie, talked about how much easier it was to make this movie and about how much more fun on set they had. And like, I'm not trying to say that every actor has to suffer for their art, but The Last Jedi gave those actors some really good stuff to work with. And this movie gives them jack shit and treats their acting ability as if it is nothing. They don't have an opportunity to act in this movie.
Right. And there's no need to really sort of like, I mean, we could place blame on Abrams and Terrio, and we probably will. But as far as like the interplay between the director and the actors, there's no need to sort of make him and Rian Johnson compete. The reason why, and not that you were sort of like making this particular point, but the reason why John Boyega during the press for Rise of Skywalker said, "You ain't gonna Disney Plus me. Like, I don't know what I'd be returning for." It's mostly because of the fan reception. They're the ultimate, like, sort of enemies in this equation. Like, because people were racist from the moment of the first of him showing up in the first trailer. Like, that's why he's like, "You can offer me whatever kind of money. I'm not gonna be on a stupid Disney Plus series."
Yeah. And I completely, don't get me wrong. I understand why none of the actors want to come back. I think it's sad that they don't want to come back because they are all fantastic actors, but I completely understand why they would never want to go through this particular bullshit again.
Right. And they're only so lucky. They are so lucky that they're old enough to sort of make those decisions and not, for instance, as young as Jake Lloyd or as sort of like inexperienced or with less of a resume as like Ahmed Best to mm-hmm. be able to do conventions after the release of this.
Yeah.
I imagine how much of a nightmare it must have been. You're Daisy Ridley. You've been an actress for a while, but you haven't really gotten those meaty roles. At best, you've been a featured actress or really small parts. And then you're asked, "Do you want to be the main character of Star Wars?" It must feel like your dream came true. And then it just turns into a fucking nightmare.
Yeah. I mean, we haven't even talked about the fact that Rose isn't in this movie basically at all, because they don't even bother with trying to explain why Rose is gone. Apparently a lot of the scenes that were filmed with her were her working with Leia, but of course they only had so much footage of Carrie Fisher, mm-hmm. and it wound up not working. So basically everything Rose does just ends up on the cutting room floor.
Yeah. And probably the most impactful thing you get from the entire experience of Rise of Skywalker is looking at her expression in the fucking red carpet premiere.
Yeah, because she's not... Kelly Marie Tran got it the worst of any of these actors for she was a woman and she was a minority on top of being a woman. And I felt like everyone just piled on. The reason The Last Jedi was bad was because specifically of you. And it wasn't. When you really think about it, the character Rose is not a big part of The Last Jedi. And
she's a means to an end for another character, which is a whole nother like sort of can of worms we could discuss for whatever. Yeah. But at the very least, like, she has like characterizations, she has motivation, like, you know, for instance, why she feels a certain way about like the general circumstances of like with her sister and stuff like that. I'm glad that at least like she was able to do something with Disney and or at least likely make money with Raya and the Last Dragon, which is a pretty neat animated movie. It's a recommendation.
I wish I had
money for it, but like, what are you gonna do?
I think Pete, in the aftermath of this movie, people are like, they need to throw as much money at her as possible and give Rose a Disney Plus series. I don't necessarily think they need to do that, but I do think she deserves whatever goodwill and whatever positive energy the universe is going to send her way.
Yes.
Because fuck me, the fan backlash towards her in particular was completely and utterly unjustifiable. Like, not even a little bit justified. Oh boy. Is there... we're not even talking about the fucking movie, because nothing happens in this movie!
Shadow Ray. Which was another sort of, like, trailer fodder kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I thought the lightsaber battle was neat and intense and well choreographed.
Yeah. And it was short and sweet. Like, it had like the epic setting and it had like beats, and there were reasons why certain things happened in it, and that was fine.
Yeah, and then Carrie Russell, but she is just there to be it seems like she is just there to be an action figure, because they give her the character. Also,
hasn't she worked with J.J. Abrams a lot in the past? Did he just call her up and say, hey, you want to have this small part and work for a weekend?
Yeah, probably. And that's fine. And J.J. Abrams does that a lot with people he's collaborated with before. And I don't really have a problem with that. That's cool. Like, it's neat, but if you're going to invite these actors here, give them something. Don't have Greg Grunfeld come back after he was gone to The Last Jedi just so he can blow the fuck up in a fucking X-Wing. Just don't... Actors need shit to act out. Actors aren't action figures. Every scenario that you have... Well, no, never mind. I don't know. I think I'm suffering prequel syndrome myself, which is that I have everything to say and nothing to say at the same time.
This movie is not for characters to act in. It is for characters to advance the plot.
Yeah. And that does a huge disservice to the immense talent that they have on hand. And I think, do we have anything else in this act that we want to talk about?
Palpatine fucks. How?
What do you mean? I don't want to know how.
Well, not how. The
Force.
I forget. That is the get out of all
Star
Wars plot holes, the Force.
To quote Han Solo in a little known movie known as The Force Awakens, that's not how the Force works.
Well, I mean, then I don't have. I guess I don't have to get into how my belief is that he comes lightning.
Can I move into Act 3 now?
Sure. You know what? Yeah, fuck it. Fuck it. Go ahead.
Okay, let me take a drink of water. Ugh. So, we return with the Emperor giving some instruction to General McEvil, who gives a shit, to blow up a planet no one gives a shit about with the Star Destroyer armed with the Death Star cannon, because that is literally the only threat any of these movies can come up with for why people give a shit about the Empire. Poe, who has apparently forgotten all the lessons he learned about leadership, speaks to an unconscious and mostly dead Leia, saying he doesn't know what to do. Luckily for Poe, Lando Calrissian is back to give him a pep talk. Meanwhile, Finn misses Rey, because his only character traits in this movie seem to revolve around missing Rey and worrying about Rey and pausing every 10 minutes to yell, Rey! Forgetting his character art from The Last Jedi. Also, this stupid cute robot following them around just so happens to have a Mac to Exegol, which means that literally every single thing that's happened with the fucking Wayfinders and the fucking Sith Blade and the fucking mission to the fucking Death Star has been completely fucking pointless. It could have been easily fucking avoided by just bothering to ask Droid his fucking name and what his fucking purpose was. Fuck. Back on planet Irulan, Rey burns Kylo's TIE fighter and is planning to pull a Luke. She tries to cast Anakin's lightsaber into the flames, but luckily Force Ghost Luke Skywalker is there to give the audience a cheap pop and chastise Rian Johnson for having the audacity to give his character some fucking depth. We get an unnecessary flashback to Leia's Jedi training that really only exists because some dipshit was going to bitch about how Leia could train Rey. Rey is given Leia's lightsaber, which is most definitely on sale right now at your local Galaxy's Edge. Rey says she doesn't have the Wayfinder, but then Luke says some vague shit about her having all she needs, and it's at this point Rey realizes that Kylo's ship just so happens to have a fucking Wayfinder, because she fled to planet Ireland and never bothered to look at the fucking triangle-shaped thing that was letting off the faint whispers of evil voices. And just so we can get back to the business of deifying Luke Skywalker, Luke lifts his old X-Wing out of the water so that Rey can fly it back, because we can't have Rey do shit on her own and Luke Skywalker has to be Space Jesus Jr. Fuck! Oh, and R2-D2 just reboots C-3PO after his sacrifice. Fuck! Finn and Poe come up with the genius plan of flying to Exegol and blowing shit up. And luckily for them, Rey is broadcasting a signal for them to follow her. Rey arrives at Exegol and walks into the evil Sith stronghold. In the air, space fighting shit happens, and Finn goes with Janna to ride space horses on the hull of a Star Destroyer full of 30 seconds before they're just fighting on foot again, because J.J. Abrams pulled Zack Snyder and shows a cool visual over a cohesive and coherent action sequence. Fuck! Rey finds the Emperor's throne room, and Palpatine reveals that his actual plan was always for Rey to come to him so that he could take control of her body. This flies in the face of what he told Kylo about killing her, as if Kylo had succeeded, he'd be royally fucking boned. Fuck! More fighting shit happens above as Kylo Ren arrives on the scene, even though he doesn't have a fucking wayfinder to find his way. Fuck! He runs into the Knights of Ren, who still do approximately jack shit in this entire fucking movie and haven't been seen on screen in like half an hour. Fuck! In the sky, Greg Renfield dies and Poe once again loses hope because J.J. Abrams hates everything that you liked about The Last Jedi. No need to fear, though, as a bunch of callbacks to other better series and movies are here. Fuck. On the ground, Kylo kills the Knights of Ren, and Rey kills the fucking Putty Patrol or whatever. Rey and Kylo stand to confront the Emperor, who said something about their dyad and how he no longer needs Rey, and somehow he is able to restore his body by sucking the souls out of them, like Bette Midler, Sarah Michelle Gellar, and Kathy Najimy did that one virgin kid in Hocus Pocus. I wish someone would put a spell on me to fast-forward me to the end of this fucking movie. With the Emperor restored or whatever, he casts Force Lightning and temporarily disables the Resistance ships. Not that it fucking matters, because as soon as he stops to shove Kylo Ren into a hole, the ships are back online, because we can never have more than 5 minutes of our characters being in any kind of fucking peril to make us feel any emotions than either boredom, anger, or both. Fuck. The only good part of this climax is Rey hearing the voices of the Jedi imploring her to rise, a scene that admittedly gave me goosebumps. With that, Rey is able to get back to her feet. Palpatine's solution to this is his solution to everything, which is to shoot Force Lightning at someone until it inevitably fucking backfires on him. Spoiler warning, it inevitably backfires on him, as Rey is able to use Palpatine's Force Lightning against him, killing him once or for all, or at least until someone decides he needs to live again. Rey collapses, seemingly dying from the effort. But remember, our characters can't be in peril for more than 5 minutes, so Kylo Ren crawls out of a fucking canyon in the ground somehow, and crawls to Rey. He uses a Force Phoenix down or whatever on Rey. J.J. Abrams then whips out his dick and pisses directly into my face as Rey kisses a man who's been good for maybe all of an hour but has killed hundreds personally and overseen the death of millions without nary a fucking blink, because this movie cannot bear to try not to Xerox elements of the original trilogy and haphazardly paste them in this movie. And then Kylo dies and Leia dies. Fuck. Back on planet shit, I don't even think they gave this planet a name. Because honestly, it doesn't matter to us or the screenwriters. Anyways, the Resistance celebrates, everyone hugs, we get a 3-second blinking miss it kiss between two female characters we don't know or care about, just to appease the people who rightfully want some sort of LGBTQ representation in these movies. Chewie gets the medals because assholes have complained about it since the outset of time, and Daisy Ridley, John Boyega, and Oscar Isaacs break kayfabe and cry with happiness that they can leave the Star Wars franchise forever. Because seriously, fuck these movies and the bullying they had to endure for appearing in them. In our epilogue, Rey travels to Tatooine. You remember Tatooine, don't you? It's the place where Anakin Skywalker was a child slave, and the place where Anakin's mother was killed, and the place where Anakin slaughtered men, women, and children in rage, and the place that Luke Skywalker desperately wanted to leave even before his uncle and aunt were murdered and set on fucking fire. Fuck. Rey buries Luke and Leia's lightsabers in the sand. Wait, did Leia even ever go to Tatooine? Ugh, whatever. Some old white lady asks Rey what her last name is, and in one last final fuck you to everyone who loved the idea of Rey being a nobody who became a somebody who didn't need a last name or a heritage to become special and great, Rey adopts the last name of a man that she knew for like 2 days and the woman who never bothered to take up the name at all. Fuck, fuck, fuck. Rey looks at the twin sons, the movie is over, and I hope I never have to watch it ever again.
So, do you know the name of that droid?
Dio?
Dio. Kono Dio da.
Yes! I was going to do it if you didn't.
Good, good, good. I'm hoping that like someone, one of the writers was like a fan of JoJo, and it's like, let's just call him Dio. But just to diffuse some of that anger, I just try to comfort myself in the face of this movie.
Yeah, I don't know, and I don't really care. I think if there's,
you know, I noticed a thing that really pissed me off during the big space battle. You know when they're blowing up the Star Destroyers and they shoot the guns and that blows up the entire Star Destroyer?
Yeah.
That's the ending to Independence Day.
Oh, man.
It's the exact ending to Independence Day. I'm like, and then it's cutting to like all these Star Destroyers around the galaxy just blowing up.
Oh, my God, like, you're right.
Straight up the ending to Independence Day. All that was missing was someone saying, we know how to defeat them. Get on the radio. And then someone on a telegraph.
Mm. Oh my God, you're right. Oh God, if only Roland Emmerich had directed these movies.
At least it would have been stupid and fun.
Yeah. Oh boy. Just, can we talk about the fact that Rey and Kylo, I refuse to call him Ben Solo because he's fucking Kylo Ren. We see him murder people in the beginning of this fucking movie. Like, say what you would like about Return and the fact that Vader kills people in the other movies. At least they didn't have him kill someone in the one that they were going to have him be redeemed in.
Yeah. I mean, this is also, like, my issue. And one thing that we didn't talk about when in Act 2 was fucking General Hux, because who cares? But General Hux, I understand that his explanation for turning was flimsy, but be that as it may, like he and Kylo Ren were presided over the deaths of billions upon billions of people when they blew up 5 planets with their Starkiller base in that first movie. And J.J. Abrams himself forgot about it, despite the fact that like he may have tried So, which is why like also his betrayal falls flat. Aside from the fact that Richard E. Grant shoots him in the fucking heart immediately after.
But why couldn't... It makes no sense to me that Hux should have just become the Supreme Leader, because that's really all he's really wanted. Like, there is a shot of the Star Destroyer blowing up, and, like, you get to see Richard E. Grant's, like, mug in the... destroyed remains of the Star Destroyer in what is supposed to be a moment, but we don't know anything about him.
Yeah, he's a nothing character.
That so what, I want to imagine that was based on the consultation of George Lucas. He's like, there's an even more general name Pride. it's in the tradition of him, like, call him like Darth Icky or something.
Yeah.
And apparently he's from the original trilogy or something, because he's like, it's like, because when he's talking to the Emperor, he's like, I served you, my master, as I served you before.
In the old wars. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, like, what is that in reference to? I don't get it.
Why did it exists purely because people are going to be like, wait, why is this guy in charge? So they're like, just write something that, you know, he and Palpatine used to go out to lunch together. They were big fans of Roy Rogers. They just went out and had like a two-piece and a biscuit every time. and that's why Palpatine trusts him, because if you like Roy Rogers, that means you're good people. I mean, it's better than the explanation that they gave anyways, which was essentially, fuck you, it doesn't matter. I don't know what to say.
Well, we could talk about, for instance, the scene that you were pre-recording this podcast, you were really sort of responding well to, which was the Rise scene,
where they had yes.
every Jedi, everyone from Samuel Jackson to Ewan McGregor to fucking Hayden Christensen.
Who sounds sexy as fuck in this movie. Yeah.
There was going to be a deleted scene where they all appear as Force ghosts.
Yeah, but if there isn't any better hype for the fucking Kenobi series with the return of Hayden Christensen, then I'd say that's it.
Yeah, because I think you pointed out that someone actually gave Hayden Christensen some direction.
Yeah, well, no, that's the point. George Lucas never gave him any legitimate direction. And I think by the time of, there was that interview in around the time of episode 2 where he's like, I was really searching for the character's motivation, but then I realized, you know what, like, I just listen to what George Lucas tells me and, like, sort of have him be my driver. Mm-hmm. And now J.J. Abrams, who is a legitimate director, or at least, like, is not the husk that George Lucas became, like, actually directed him in some way, shape, or form, and so he sounds compelling.
Yeah. People like working with J.J. Abrams for a reason. Actors like working with him for a reason. And I think you could see in The Force Awakens that he can get great performances from great actors. Like, it's not like J.J. Abrams is a shit director who can't make a movie. He makes good movies. He makes compelling television. It's just that I feel as though he and Terrio and Kathleen Kennedy looked at the problems of The Last Jedi and felt like they had to solve every complaint in that movie in the course of this movie while trying to tell their own story. I think if they had just not concerned themselves so fucking much with the back, like we said at the beginning, it's shocking and surprising that Disney gave a fuck. And it seems as though now, with the content that they're producing, that they just don't give a fuck anymore. That they're like, fuck it, we're gonna do like we did with Marvel. We're just gonna let people make the movies they wanna fucking make. And if they don't like it, fuck it. We're gonna make billions of fucking dollars anyways. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
That's the way it should have been with this movie, but it wasn't. And everyone got real scared and tense over what happened with The Last Jedi, and so they decided to play this movie as safe as fucking possible. This movie, if you like football, this movie is basically a 2.5 hour long prevent defense. It's just keep things, just like, don't let any big plays happen. Don't let them, you know, don't let them throw too far. Don't let people get too upset. I would have preferred a movie that was just like, fuck it. Like, they're going to be pissed off no matter what the fuck we do. And that's a lesson that they seem to know with the MCU that they didn't know with Star Wars for some reason.
Hmm. speaking of actors not giving a shit, let's talk about Mark Hamill.
Yeah.
What, is it just me, or did he sound drunk? Like, when he first appears, his first line, a Jedi's weapon should be treated with more dignity. I was like, are you drunk? What the fuck?
No. Again, lightsabers are such a fucking chaotic element in the series. They're either the most important thing, or they're just like toys. They're just tools. And between Last Jedi and Rise of Skywalker, we can see that dichotomy in action.
I think Mark Hamill just didn't have much in the way of... There's not a lot of meat on this particular bone. And I think in other times when Mark Hamill has come back to voice Luke Skywalker, I feel like this is much more the performance that he gives, which is very... almost flat, kind of.
He's not, taking a walk.
Yeah. He's Mark Hamill was so emotive and so... I said it before, but I felt like he used the conflict that he was feeling about the character of Luke to drive his performance. And he had a director that was willing to push him to go to emotional places. I get the feeling that they just wanted this to be a nice, easy ride for Mark Hamill. And however he was going to deliver his lines, that was good enough for them. However he wanted to be. And this portrayal of Luke is a lot closer to what we would have gotten had Mark Hamill gotten his way initially with Rian Johnson and gotten a more... A version of Luke Skywalker that didn't have those shades of gray, basically.
Right, right. I mean, the beauty of to maybe exaggerate a little, but the beauty of the performance in Last Jedi and combined with the portrayal is that you get the sort of Luke Skywalker that you want by the end. You get as ideal as possible of like the old Master Luke after you get this sort of like schlubby, doubtful, sort of like over it, jaded kind of version. It's a transformation in itself. In this case,
he finds himself again.
Yeah, in this case, like with this movie, it's essentially just sort of just by numbers. It's kind of crap. I had a different way of articulating this, but
it's like if you tell Mark Hamill to do a Joker impression, but you don't give him any, but you don't give him direction.
Oh, like that part at the beginning where he's the weird green guy.
Wait, what?
You didn't notice that? That was Mark Hamill doing the voice of that guy that they meet up with. And he's doing the Joker voice. At the beginning of the movie, when they're on the Falcon and they meet up with like the guy that gives them information.
Uh-huh.
The little green guy, that's voiced by Mark Hamill. And he does the Joker voice for him.
No, you misread that. That was a person named Mark Hamill. It's no wonder neither of us could tell.
Oh, gosh. Just as a final act, it just seems so... Aside from that Rise thing, which was legitimately... was the only scene in this movie that really was like... woke me up and made me pay attention. Just so... so well done. And... I if the whole movie had been like that scene, I wouldn't complain. But it's undone by, you know, just stuff that doesn't make sense. Like Palpatine saying he doesn't know about the dyad, and he realizes that the dyad is happening, and then he wants to take over Rey's body, but then he doesn't want to take over Rey's body because he can use the dyad to resurrect himself and get a cool smoking jacket and a red handkerchief. And it's like so much shit is happening. We see Poe once, like I said, completely forget all the lessons he learns. He fucking completely loses hope while people are asking him what to do. He is completely and utterly without confidence. He's basically about to give up right until Lando arrives. And like, it just means like, it doesn't, it aside from that scene with Rey, this scene doesn't make me feel anything. All the drama is because this movie is all plot and no story. There's no fear that no one's gonna die. There's no fear that one of our heroes is gonna die. There's no trepidation. There's no anticipation for anything. Even when Rey dies, you're like, well, fucking Rey's not gonna die. She'll come back. And then fucking Kylo, who again was force pushed into a fucking canyon in the fucking ground, just somehow climbs up and is not only okay, but okay enough that he is able to give Rey his life force. It just, as Cody Rhodes said, it just kept moving. It kept moving until the end, and the end doesn't mean anything, and the end destroys what the character of Rey could have been and replaces her with something that doesn't matter, because Daisy really doesn't want to be in these movies anymore, so her being a Skywalker doesn't fucking matter.
Mm-hmm. I could see, like, in 10 years when they do another movie or another three movies, or what am I saying, 10 years? 3 years when they do another trilogy. We may see him return. Just because it, like, as much as like wrestling, it's like a never say never kind of scenario. Maybe they'll be enticed by like having directors that or scripts that appeal to them, and then Disney will just executive the shit out of it. And
yeah,
words.
I feel like in a few years, The Last Jedi is going to get a critical reevaluation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for the most part, people liked it. Like, it'll. I've seen it get another reevaluation among fans. Like, again, people disliking it because of what Rian Johnson said about Finn. But again, upon watching it, it's like they did something for that character. So whatever.
Yeah, I mean, Empire had that same. I mean, Empire was nowhere near as completely bashed as this movie, but it did have a level of fan backlash. And even the prequels have had their own reevaluation to the point where people aren't enraged by them anymore and are like, yeah, they're bad, but they have their purpose and there's good parts I like about them. I think that reevaluation will come for The Last Jedi. It's just gonna take time. It's gonna take a lot of time and a lot of particularly getting out of the cultural moment in which we currently find ourselves in 2021, where many of the things that were complained about were, if not a direct result, a parallel result of the person we had as president and the questions that particularly us in America decided we had to start to ask ourselves, and about what was okay and what was not okay. And I hope that we're coming out of that moment into something that is more positive, that will allow the people who were just burnt out by The Last Jedi criticism in general to come back and reevaluate the movie and at least come away with the opinion that it's fine. You know, it's not, it, maybe it's not for me, but it's fine.
Man. I don't know what else to say about this.
Yeah, I guess we have. I mean, do you? Let's do our wrap up of our ideas on the sequel trilogy. I have a big long thing written. I'm guessing you guys don't, but no, I
genuinely don't.
No.
Yeah.
To get out of the way, essentially the trajectory of this went like, just from the perspective of a moviegoer in the social media age, these movies were fucking discomforting to get through. I could technically turn off. I don't have to be on Twitter all the time. I don't have to be on Facebook or fan boards. I'm not as much of a fan, but even then it was unavoidable and inescapable. All the think pieces, for the most part, like just all the terrible fan backlash from what amounts to three movies that started off fun, but a little derivative, pretty damn intriguing, and then just like took a nosedive into, oh wow, this series is oversaturated and completely fucking irrelevant. I didn't see Solo and Rogue One at the time because it's like there was enough like just annoying discussion, and whatever kind of fan I am of a series or of a movie, everything is about franchises these days. That aside, like when I watch a movie, I like to look at the discussion of it, like the criticism of it. If I like a movie quite a lot, then like to sort of give a particular example, I just saw Promising Young Woman last night. I enjoyed the hell out of it specifically because it affected me on like the sort of ride that the director wanted to take the audience was very, very much I was there for. But looking at the critical reviews, as universally praised as it was, there were some people who came at it from certain perspectives of like what it wasn't getting to. That was something that I enjoyed doing, even if I found that like I disagreed with some of them. But like this was like these movies were just like an overall morass for things that ultimately like are very fleeting sort of interests in my case, and I dare say in the grand scheme of like popular culture, Disney has made them much more fleeting, much less special, but there were still elements of enjoyment.
All right. I guess it's my turn. When it was announced that Disney had bought Star Wars, I don't want to say I called it, but I saw something like this coming because Disney is Disney and Disney does what Disney does. I knew when Disney bought this, Star Wars was never going to go away. We are going to get Star Wars until the sun burns out, basically. It's just going to keep happening. And, you know, I'm fine with that because the Star Wars universe exists in a way where there's plenty of stories you can tell. Like The Mandalorian, that's exactly what I'm talking about. That's definitely a story that can be told in the Star Wars universe. The Kenobi series, that's probably another story that can be told in the Star Wars universe, and I'm hoping it'll be good. And they announced this trilogy. I knew it was coming, and I knew there were going to be angry people. Now, I am friends with a certain girl who really loves the original Star Wars trilogy and even has reverence for the prequels because, and for some reason, she really respects George Lucas as a creator. Even though I've tried to convince her multiple times that very little of what makes Star Wars works is thanks to George Lucas. But when Disney bought Star Wars, she was furious because George Lucas was being completely cut out. And, you know, it's shitty that they said that, you know, we'll listen to you, and then they just reneged on that. But again, it has to be because George Lucas's ideas aren't very good. And I've tried to convince her over and over that, like, there are good things in The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi. But even if I manage to get her to watch those movies, she's just going to work backwards from a conclusion that the movie is bad, and she'll nitpick specific points out and say it. And I feel like that's what a lot of people did. They wanted these movies to be bad because Disney has taken our Star Wars. Even though Star Wars never belonged to you, you never owned Star Wars. You never had anything to do with Star Wars other than being a consumer. That's all Star Wars is. That's all Star Wars ever was. It is a product to be consumed. People say like, oh, you just sit in a theater and shovel popcorn into your mouth as pretty pictures flash in front of you. Fuck off. That is every movie. Movies can be high art, but all movies are high art. Rise of Skywalker is art. It's not good art, but it's art nonetheless. You don't get to define what art is. You can't just say like, oh, this is mindless and stupid, therefore it has no value. That is not how cinema works. And people saying Disney took Star Wars away from us. Disney didn't take anything. George Lucas sold Star Wars to Disney. He didn't have to do that. He could have just kept Star Wars forever. Just let things like the Clone Wars keep going and let people write comic books and novels about the extended universe. And he said, like, after he did the prequels, he didn't want to make an episode 7. And that's fine. And I kind of regret a few things I said when we were talking about the original series. I have kind of grown to hate George Lucas over several things, because the original Star Wars was supposed to be one of the first inductees into the National Film Archive, but Lucas wouldn't send the original film. He would only send the special editions, and they wouldn't accept it. That shows a level of arrogance that is really just not, it's not good. Okay. I can't say anything beyond that. So yeah, that's what Star Wars is. Star Wars is a product. Star Wars is something to be consumed. That's all it ever was. That's all any movie ever is. Even the most beautifully crafted movie from your favorite director, it's a product to be consumed. You're supposed to watch it and move on. That's all it is. So chill the fuck out.
All right. So ultimately, the sequel trilogy was undone by doing precisely what the original trilogy did and what the prequel trilogy just barely accomplished. Lucas did not start writing the Star Wars with any sort of grander plan, and the fact that the original trilogy comes together in the way that it did, despite all the production turmoil, is nothing short of a fucking miracle. Lucas once again approached the prequel trilogy having only the vaguest of plans, with producer Rick McCollum frequently chiding Lucas for not finishing the scripts and having a more refined idea of where he wanted to go with things. Nevertheless, regardless of their quality, the prequels do deliver a somewhat satisfying view of Anakin's fall to the dark side. Disney and Lucasfilm set out for making this new trilogy with no firm ideas of where it was going to go. Compare that with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, a group of independent movies that nevertheless contribute pieces to a much bigger story. While the MCU may not have had each and everything sketched out, it did have its endgame, Thanos. Everything was working towards eventually telling a story that would see the heroes come together to be Thanos. J.J. Abrams talks often about the mystery box, but as we've said on multiple occasions, when writing a mystery, you write the answers to those mysteries first. It was incumbent on Abrams to provide answers to these questions to whoever was going to take the helm for the movies after him, so they could grow and develop them into a cohesive narrative. Instead, Abrams left the threads flapping in the wind, leaving fans to fill in the blanks. This caused a potentially poisonous scenario I don't think anyone at Disney saw coming. Fans being so hyped up by their own theories that whatever they had created in their minds was never really going to live up to what happened on the actual screen. Rian Johnson provided answers to the questions Abrams had posed. In doing so, however, fans felt like they had been completely swerved. For example, Johnson's decision to make Rey's parents nobodies was clearly supposed to be a message about latent force ability not being a birthright. The force belongs to everyone. Rey wasn't special, in much the same way that Luke wasn't particularly special. But that choice seemed openly hostile and antagonistic to a group of fans who had spent the better part of 2 years speculating on the endless possibilities as did the decision to make Luke Skywalker seem more cynical, even if Rian Johnson was simply putting the words of the fandom at large into Luke's mouth. Johnson also left this film with questions needing to be answered. And thus, Disney had to make a choice. They could either be bold and risk another bout of criticism and bullying, or they could be as safe as possible and try to piss off the least amount of people possible. If Rotten Tomatoes is to be believed, it worked. If all you want is a Star Wars movie where shit blows up and people fight with laser swords, Rise of Skywalker is your movie. But Rise of Skywalker is also a sequel to nothing. They barely mention what happened in either The Force Awakens or The Last Jedi. The prequels don't get mentioned hardly at all. Each of its ridiculously long acts feels like the filmmakers trying to cram as much plot as possible into a 2.5-hour runtime while failing at all to tell a story. The sequel trilogy, therefore, in my estimation, is something of a disappointment. The discourse around it makes it exhausting to talk about. The Force Awakens is a solid movie. The Last Jedi, as you will find out in our next episode, is damn near my favorite Star Wars movie ever. Rise of Skywalker is nothing. It is literally a bunch of sound and fury signifying nothing. Here's hoping when Disney makes the next trilogy, and they will, they start with a plan. It would be a shame if the galaxy far, far away ended with such a whimper.
Two things. Number one, apparently Rian Johnson may actually be going ahead with his trilogy, which, like, now I fucking welcome the goddamn backlash and reaction to what'll likely be something pretty interesting and more fleshed out, since it's not following someone else's ideas. And number two, Disney did take something away from us. They took away Star Wars 1313.
Forgot about that one.
What's Star Wars 1313?
It's gonna be the big open world game that was, I think, being developed by Visceral, who did Dead Space. We ended up getting Fallen Order, which is nice, but, like, people had high hopes for that one.
Disney hates video games for some reason. It's kind of weird.
Yeah.
And what about Kingdom Hearts?
They only like Kingdom Hearts in as much as they don't have anything to do with Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah, really. And they probably, if they had anything to do with it, they probably wish they didn't.
Like, there's not... You can't... I kept looking around when I went to Disney World. This is a tangent, but fuck it. This movie sucked, whatever. When I went to Disney World, I kept looking around for Kingdom Hearts stuff. And I think the only thing we found was Sora's Keyblade. That was literally it. And it was a keychain. Nothing else. No t-shirts. No nothing. And that was relatively close to Kingdom Hearts 3 coming out. Got married in 2019. So yeah, Kingdom Hearts 3 was out. And yeah, nothing. There was just nothing of Kingdom Hearts. So yeah, Disney does not give a shit. It's Square Enix's franchise. It's not really theirs. And on that bombshell, I guess. So we have watched a lot of Star Wars movies. And I think the thing that helps us in this podcast as compared to our old podcast is that we can now move on to something different. What will that different thing be? Well, you will find out on the next episode of Sequelize It, where we wrap up some of our, you know, loose feelings. I think we did a pretty good job of summarizing how we feel about all these movies, but we'll wrap it up. We'll have some top 10s. We're going to rank, well, not top 10s, there's more than 10. How many movies are there? 11?
11. Yep.
So we're going to do our top 11. Star Wars movies. We're going to talk about that a little bit. And then we're going to talk about what our next franchise is going to be. And I think it'll be a nice break to not have to talk about Star Wars. I love Star Wars, but I think I've talked myself to death about it. And it's been a journey. I guess as we're heading out, just like, how has it been watching all these movies? Not so much about the plot, but just about, like, about the experience. Oh yeah, we are. God damn it.
We don't need to get into that.
This movie fried my brain, and I already had a sinus headache, so that just made it worse. Okay, so on that note of shit we will get into next week. I'm Casey.
I'm your foxy friend Backlash.
I'm No Chris Alive.
And we will see you next time on Sequelize It. Yeah, I was about to start a whole another 15-minute segment there for, like, no fucking reason.
I'm glad I went with my gut. I just don't.